argued, United States versus Loera. Mr. Schlesinger or Ms. Schlesinger?
Good morning, Your Honors. Jeffrey Schlesinger for the appellant, Jose Javier Loera. May it please the court. Jose Javier Loera is a drug mule who was caught as a passenger in a van loaded with cocaine. Although there was no evidence that he was a dealer of cocaine other than his riding in the van on that occasion, or that he had ever driven another load, he is presently serving a sentence of 20 years in the Bureau of Prisons. Now, Mr. Loera was a passenger in that van, which was owned by someone else. They were stopped in Indiana on Interstate Highway 65 near Lafayette, Indiana. While the van was driving from Atlanta, Georgia to Northwest Indiana, federal agents had an informant who was involved in investigating the transportation of cocaine, and that informant had advised the agents that this load was being transported, and in fact including the exact route, and the informant was following in another vehicle which was supposed to monitor the cocaine to make sure it got to its intended destination. There's a hidden compartment in the van in which there were 21 kilograms of cocaine. Now, the federal agents wanted the van stopped to intercept the cocaine, but they wanted local law enforcement to perform the stop. So on the night that the van left Atlanta, federal agents contacted the Indiana State Police and advised them that there was a van, it's a Ford Explorer, actually.
What is your argument? I don't understand. We know what happened. Now, what was the violation?
Well, the violation, we believe it's a pretextual stop, and I acknowledge that this court has permitted pretextual stops.
No, it's the Supreme Court.
Well, that Wren case hurts you.
I understand, but this court has acknowledged Wren.
The Supreme Court. It doesn't matter what we think, right?
Well, it does on this case, at least at this point, Your Honor. Our problem is that Wren and the cases like that which permit pretextual stops, Wren specifically was based on observations by a police officer in a high drug traffic area that led him to be suspicious of a truck. He then did a traffic stop on the truck and did find, he found crack cocaine in that instance. There are a number of state cases and federal cases in which similar situations.
There's no requirement that the officer have a well-grounded suspicion or anything else, right?
As long as there's a traffic stop.
Right.
Correct.
That's the end of it.
Well, the Supreme Court in the case said it in our reply brief, Ornelas versus United States, does talk about examining all the historical facts that lead up to the stop. That was one reason I was going into the information that they had. I don't think that the government should be permitted to use a pretextual stop as a reason to avoid any probable cause determination.
But that's the whole point of Wren. That's the whole point.
But Wren, in this case, he doesn't have
probable cause to believe there's a drug or some other serious violation. You just need it. You don't need anything. Well, you can just stop a person because you think, well, maybe he's a drug dealer. As long as you have probable cause to stop him for a traffic violation, it doesn't matter what your real objectives are and what your objectives are based on. That's Wren.
Correct.
So there's nothing left for you.
Well, no, I believe that there is, Your Honor, with due respect.
So.
If, in this case, in contrast to Wren, the federal agents had probable cause. Our fear is that if federal agents can develop a case and then simply call local law enforcement and say, we want this vehicle stopped, and in every instance that vehicle will be stopped, it's encouraging. It basically makes the fourth.
What difference does it make if the local law enforcement officers use these pretextual stops? Because in order to enforce drug laws. What difference does it make whether there are two agencies involved, two police forces involved, or one police force?
Well, it evades any review for probable cause.
But that's the whole point of Wren. Don't you understand? There's no review for probable cause to suspect a serious crime. You just need probable cause to believe there's a traffic violation.
Wren has created a hole in the exclusionary rule that you can drive a truck through.
Or an SUV in this case, or couldn't drive an SUV through. But that's part of the problem I'm trying to illustrate.
That's a problem that the Supreme Court has solved in favor of the police. The FBI working with the local police rather than the local police by themselves or the FBI by themselves doesn't make any difference.
Well, but I believe Wren is also limited to those facts.
Wren is limited to the facts of Wren?
Well, Wren is
not a precedent?
I'm sorry. It is a precedent. But it's based upon the facts of the circumstance. We have a whole different set of facts here. I think the facts in this case...
The facts are always different from case to case.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, but...
They lay down a rule.
But there's a big enough difference in this case that it would render the Fourth Amendment meaningless in any vehicle situation.
But you've got a state trooper stopping the car for traffic violations, undisputed, and then suspicious conduct by the driver and the passenger, and further questions being asked, and consent sought and given. So you've got nothing.
Well, as long as the original stop was okay and it was based upon either reasonable suspicion or probable cause.
But you have no dispute with the facts that there were traffic violations.
Well, we actually did dispute that at the trial level, but the trial judge's determination is binding on that, and I acknowledge that.
Right.
The case of Whiteley versus Warden, which was cited in our original brief, I think is more similar to the facts of this case, in which a local law enforcement, I believe a sheriff in Wyoming, had just put a warrant together and radioed another officer to pick that person up. What the Supreme Court said in that case is that we can't review probable cause. There turned out to be no probable cause in that case, but the government should not be able to avoid the requirement of submitting its evidence to either a magistrate or at least tell the local law enforcement. I think that would be an acceptable way to do it, because there are numerous cases that hold that any information conveyed from one law enforcement officer to another...
It's quarreling with the concept of pretextual searches as being permissible. You don't like pretext. Well, you lost on that.
I'm not necessarily alone in that. A number of states don't also...
It doesn't matter how many people agree with you. The Supreme Court doesn't agree with you.
Well, but I don't think the Supreme Court has decided a case... I think Whiteley's facts are actually closer to the facts of this case than Wren. If it stopped for further investigation, and Wren doesn't say that, but I think that's the implicit holding in Wren, that an officer may have a duty to do further investigation. In this case, there was no further investigation needed. So for that reason, we believe that there is a distinction and that the court should create an exception to avoid abuse of the Fourth Amendment and protect people in vehicles. Historically, also, the exception for vehicles was based upon the mobility of the vehicles, largely when the first cases were decided, Carroll versus United States. Now, with the technology...
Ancient history.
Well, I understand, but technology, they created the exception because of advances in technology. I'm also suggesting that advances in technology, in this case, they knew exactly where the van was at all times, knew where it was going to go, could track it and stop it at any time they wanted. So the historic exceptions should not apply in a situation like this. I believe that the speedy trial issue was adequately briefed. I would like to address the sentence imposed in Mr. Loera's case. His minimum sentence was increased to 20 years due to the weight of the cocaine and the fact that he did have a prior felony drug conviction. We challenged his prior felony drug conviction on his prior conviction was a conviction from Illinois, which was a state court conviction. Mr. Loera, the record does show that he was appointed counsel in that matter. He conferred briefly with counsel on the morning of his plea, and the attorney's advice was to plead guilty and you will get probation. I don't believe there was any, in fact, the evidence testified clearly that the attorney did not review any of the facts.
So you're really arguing that he was ineffective, his counsel was ineffective. And doesn't the Custis case cut you off there?
Well, I have to argue an exception in this case. I don't believe that he was there's a different definition for ineffective. We're dealing with a large volume court where a large number of people are going to be coming in. And I think if an attorney gets his client out of jail on the day he wants to get out of jail, he's effective in that way. I have the problem on my federal cases in that oftentimes my clients will want to plead guilty to something they may not be guilty of in order to avoid prolonged incarceration. I believe that Almendarez-Torres and the Custis case do permit the court. None of them, all of them leave the exception available for absence of counsel. That's what would be avoid conviction, I believe, under any of the decisions. I think that based upon the harshness of the sentence in this case, the trial court does have the obligation to review that to a limited extent to make sure that it's an adequate possession, adequate conviction for the purposes of enhancing the sentence.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schlesinger. Ms. Jacobs?
May it please the court. The government will rely on its brief for purposes of the claim that Loera makes with regard to the pretextual stop, unless there are further questions from the court. And I'll go directly to the enhanced sentencing. And what the government argues is that although the defendant may collaterally attack a prior conviction at sentencing, in this case, as Your Honor's question made clear, what the government agrees with the trial court is that what Loera was raising was an ineffective assistance claim, and that his claim that his counsel did not do much for him but get him out of jail on that day does not go as far as complete deprivation of counsel, which is what would be required for him to raise that at sentencing. Over and above that, since there was an information filed by the government under 851 for the prior drug felony, there is a statute of limitations of sort, and this information was filed more than 5 years after that previous conviction, so that would also be a procedural bar to Loera's claim. Now, the Almendarez-Torres claim, I'll just say briefly for the record that obviously Almendarez-Torres is still good law, as this court has said many times, and notwithstanding any Almendarez-Torres claim, that this case would not fall under even a requirement for a jury finding under the Apprendi line of cases, because in this case, Loera faced a maximum sentence of life after his conviction by the jury. The enhanced sentence required or requested by the government did not change the maximum sentence, and so therefore would not require jury finding, and the court properly enhanced his sentence. If there are no further questions, I won't belabor this, and I'll rely on my brief. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Schlesinger. You were appointed, and we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the